It is time for your KDNK local newscast for this Monday morning, October 10th. I'm Gavin Dahl. While many still celebrate Columbus Day, a national holiday, Denver and Boulder are among a growing list of cities to instead recognize Indigenous Peoples Day. Most government offices and banks are closed no matter which holiday they're recognizing. Eric Galatis has more.
Today marks the first Indigenous Peoples Day in Boulder and Denver. It's also Columbus Day, a federal holiday. Events today in Boulder aim beyond what most kids learn in grade school about the man celebrated for discovering lands where people had been living for thousands of years. Geraldine Dakota, a Chippewa Indian, says the Christian doctrine of discovery carried out by Columbus and Europeans who followed led to the loss of 95% of Indigenous populations.
Under the doctrine of discovery, if we failed to convert to Christianity, they could wage a just war against us and take our lands, ignore our laws, kill, murder, maim, and they thought it was right and just to do that.
On Saturday in Denver, a Native American-led Four Directions march was held as an alternative to a Columbus Day parade. A member of Sons of Italy told Denver's 9 News a lawsuit could be filed over the city council's decision establishing a day honoring Indigenous people, and the president of the Columbus Day Parade Committee called Columbus a great source of pride for Italian Americans. Not everyone agrees. Glenn Spagnolo's family roots go back to Palermo, Italy. The CU Denver instructor says when Genoa, where Columbus was born, tried to establish a day in his honor to lure American tourists, almost 100,000 people shut the city down with a general strike.
True Italians really do recognize the vile nature of this man, what he represents and what he did, and they don't want that to be representative of a true, proud Italian culture.
Dakota says in order to heal the racial wound still experienced by many Americans and move forward, people need to learn more about and embrace what really happened in the nation's history.
Our country needs to come to terms with what we've done with Indigenous people and with slavery. This is important history. It's impacted all of us, and we should know it, and our schools don't teach it.
The Boulder resolution calls for correcting omissions of Native people's historical presence in public places and is calling for tribal input to establish a new name for the city's Settlers Park. This is Eric Galatis reporting for KDNK.
Montana's Denise Juneau hopes to become the first Native American congresswoman in history this November. High Country News Associate Editor Tay Wiles has an article about Juneau called Not Politics as Usual in the current issue. For this edition of Sounds of the High Country, she talks to KDNK's Amy Haddon Marsh about the significance of Juneau's run.
Your article is about 49-year-old Denise Juneau. She's Mandan Hidatsa Blackfeet candidate for Congress from Montana. The article is called Not Politics as Usual. Why the title?
So Denise Juneau would be the first Native American woman in U.S. Congress. She is also the first Native American woman in the country elected to a statewide position. And she's also the first openly gay candidate for federal office in Montana. So she's breaking all kinds of barriers.
Juneau appears right at home running for Congress. You write that she's steeped in political activism due to her parents. Her mother served in the Montana legislature. Juneau's a Harvard grad. She went to law school. And in 2006, became director of Indian education in Montana. Talk about the changes she made in Montana tribal education.
So a couple of her big initiatives as head of Indian education and then later superintendent in Montana, Graduation Matters was one of her big initiatives to raise the graduation rates in the state. She likes to cite that from 2009 to now, the graduation rate has increased from 80% to 86%. As head of Indian education, she was in charge of a federal grant for a program called Schools of Promise, and that was to fund improvements for the lowest performing schools in the state, and those happened to be on Indian reservations. So that was in 2012. There's one more initiative that I really should mention, which is Indian Education for All. This was a program to incorporate Native American perspectives into textbooks and education statewide in Montana. So she went around to all of the different tribes and sort of worked with them and allowed them to decide how their history should be explained in textbooks for everyone in Montana. And that is a big reason why Montana is now seen as a model for how to incorporate the Indian perspective in education.
Equally compelling is how she did not back down in the face of criticism while developing that particular program. It seems to me that this is an important value for her, not backing down. Can you talk about that?
When she was working to implement Indian education for all. There were critics who said, why aren't we having French education for all? Or why aren't we highlighting the Norwegian history? And those were types of comments that she sort of just had to plow through because, of course, it was the Indian perspective in Montana that had sort of been forgotten. And she just sort of kept her eye on the prize and plowed through them. And it's really interesting to see her speak about these things. She's the kind of candidate who doesn't get rankled. And she just sort of explains these things dispassionately to continue towards the goal that she has in mind.
Tay Wiles, can you talk more about Denise Janot's character?
I did some research and I spoke with her and I spoke with a number of people who knew Denise growing up and know her now and have worked with her in various capacities. And it's interesting to look at her personal history and to see how that's coming out in her campaign now. There's this very deep family history of standing up for what they believe in and sort of plowing through racism and other systemic barriers to political empowerment. I mean, her mother tells this story of growing up on the Fort Berthold Reservation in North Dakota. And when the Garrison Dam was built in the late 40s, early 50s, it flooded their entire community and they had to leave. And her mother remembers this as a young girl, and her mother's father, Denise Juno's grandfather, fought against it and was very active. And then Denise's parents were very active in social justice actions in Billings in the 1970s. Her mother was part of the movement to create tribal colleges in the 1970s, which prior to that didn't really exist. So there's this deep family history of just working hard towards what they believe in and sort of not really paying a lot of mind to forces trying to bring them down.
Denise Janot's platform seems progressive in non-Native terms. She opposes transferring public lands to state control. She supports permanent protection of the land and waterfront. She seems to be all about integration on a political level. But what about the traditional Native American contingent that is less concerned about political integration with non-Natives, those who, like her, saw Western expansionism as an Eastern invasion? I mean, how popular is she in Indian country?
Everyone I spoke to described her candidacy and described her as sort of a celebrity in Indian country in Montana. Kids talk about her in schools. Her face is very recognizable. People know who she is. She's traveled a lot in the Indian country in Montana. I really got the sense that people feel like they know her and therefore can trust her more.
You know, it sounds like she straddles both cultures. She has one foot
right in
non-Native culture and one foot in Native culture.
I think that's true. I mean, I think as the superintendent, she has seen her job as representing all students, Native and non-Native, in Montana. And I think people have come to see her as that. And that's one of the interesting things about her as a candidate is that she's sort of broken the barrier of being a quote-unquote Native American candidate and is just what some people see as a great candidate. But she also has deep roots in traditional Native American cultures, and she understands that culture. And I think that straddling that divide is something that gives strength to her candidacy.
I guess one of the challenges to her winning is that Native American voter turnout is pretty low. What do you think are her odds of winning the election?
I think it's a little bit of a long shot still. This seat normally goes Republican, so I think she has her work cut out for her, but it's by no means out of the question that she could win this race.
Well, Tay Wiles, thanks very much for talking with me today.
Thanks for having me.
That was High Country News Associate Editor Tay Wiles talking to KDNK's Amy Haddon Marsh about her article, Not Politics as Usual, in the current issue of High Country News. Tonight, the Aspen City Council is expected to take their final vote on maintaining water rights to build dams on Upper Maroon Creek and Castle Creek on a nature hike along Maroon Creek inside the Maroon Bells Snowmass Wilderness Area over the summer. Brandon Jones explained why Wilderness Workshop would like to see the city of Aspen abandon its water right instead of developing a new dam that would impact the wilderness area.
From my understanding, the dam would be somewhere right around this area. This is a dam that has been in consideration since the mid-1960s. The rights belong to the city of Aspen, and they're thinking forward as to how Aspen is going to meet their water needs, especially given the potential consequences of climate change, which are which are so uncertain. So what we're looking at now would be down below us, rather than a wild rushing creek that it is currently, would be a reservoir. The dam that has been considered is 155 feet tall.
Oh, wow.
So it's a significant change to this ecosystem. And I spoke briefly about riparian areas, and the ecological impact of that is huge, considering the beaver population around here, the moose population, the bear, I mean, the amphibians that are already declining in population. So what we are asking the city of Aspen to do at Wilderness Workshop, and we're hoping to get some support from community members as well, is to abandon those water rights. And they're not proposing this dam anytime in the next few years. So don't hear that, you know, there's bulldozer on their way and they're going to start developing this. But they have reapplied a diligence filing, I believe, every 6 years. And when they apply for that, they are essentially saying that we intend on building these dams. So they can't necessarily tell us as community members that they don't intend on it, because they're telling the water rights folks that they are planning on building it someday in the future. And that is why they're holding on to those water rights. So if they abandon those water rights, it's very unlikely that this area would get dammed. And don't get me wrong, the city of Aspen are incredible environmental stewards. We at the Wilderness Workshop are asking them to hold true to that legacy that they've had of protecting open space for wildlife and for recreation. They're one of the best municipalities when it comes to climate change policy. You know, Aspen is incredible, has a ton of resources, and being as water rich as we are in this specific area, the Colorado River watershed, depending on the Roaring Fork so highly, leads me to believe that these dams are an unnecessary ecological impact.
Tonight, the Aspen City Council is expected to vote on maintaining water rights to build dams on Upper Maroon Creek and Castle Creek. Wilderness Workshop and other environmental groups are opposed to the city's plan, despite assurances that there's no intention to build the dams anytime soon. If you can't attend the meeting in person, you can tune in live on grassrootstv.org. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Garfield County Sheriff Lou Valario says that Colorado law does not require physical contact as a minimum standard to make a mandatory arrest. Domestic violence means an act or threatened act of violence upon a person with whom the suspect has been involved in an intimate relationship. Domestic violence also includes any other crime used as a method of coercion, control, punishment, intimidation, or revenge. Sadly, a 24-year-old woman in Glenwood Springs was murdered Friday at the Pinyon Pines apartment complex. Gustavo Olive Tellez was identified as a primary suspect in what appears to be a case of extreme domestic violence. The suspect was apprehended over the weekend in Grand Junction. Turns out Olivo Tellez was wanted on a previous domestic violence warrant and has now been charged with first-degree murder. Garfield County is expected to release the name of the shooting victim once her family members have been notified. Democratic U.S. Senator Michael Bennett and his Republican challenger Daryl Glenn will face off Tuesday for Denver television station 9 News. It's their only televised debate this election season. Doesn't feature the Green Party or Libertarian candidates for U.S. Senate. Benta Berkland has more from the state capitol.
It's been a low-key campaign, and so far the two candidates have only held one debate. It was in Grand Junction at Club 20 and not televised. Glenn has refused to participate in a Denver Post debate, while Bennett said no to a debate hosted by CBS4 and Colorado Public Television. Bennett defended the light debate schedule and thinks his campaign is doing enough to engage voters.
I think we've got a good selection of debates and a good selection of forum.
Meanwhile, Glenn's campaign refused to comment for this story. On his website, he says he's made himself available to the press, with the exception of the Denver Post. He felt the newspaper unfairly reported on a story and is no longer speaking to them. I'm Benta Berkland at the state capitol.
We'll have more on the debate for Colorado's seat in the U.S. Senate tomorrow. To get caught up on all of KDNK's election coverage this cycle, go to kdnk.org, hover over the news button in the menu on the homepage, and select 2016 election. This will give you a selection of all of our stories here that we've reported ourselves, plus everything from Benta Berkland and Eric Galatis covering the 2016 election. Reminder that ballots go out in the mail next week, and we'll have our mayoral forum on October 20th.